Shabbat Shalom. Welcome to Yada Yah Radio and our Torah study this evening. I see we have JB with us, but no Larry and Ader thus far. Maybe he'll call in as we make our way through the program. Hello, James.
How's it going?
Good.
I'm betting Larry got caught on a long nap.
Yeah, I know. He has a tendency to do that after a long day's work. We're going to begin again where we left off in our last program. We were discussing the eight statements that were brought to us by the letter that shows a person resting and essentially laying down in a restful position. The letter is the Sadak. Its most prominent scriptural term is Tazdi at the letter. Sadak is the most common Hebrew word associated with it. And it's important because Sadak is the Hebrew word for righteousness. You know, where Paul writes that the Torah cannot vindicate, it cannot make someone righteous. Well, Sadak not only means righteous, it means to vindicate, it means to be upright, it means to be right, it means to be declared not guilty. It is the operative purpose of the Torah, is to accomplish each of those things on our behalf. So here we have the first verse of this group of eight. It begins with Yahweh's name. And having Yahweh's name brought to us at the beginning of this is important because Yahweh is Sadak. In fact, that's what it says. Yahweh, you are Sadak. You are upright. You're righteous. You're consistent. You're vindicating. The Torah, the prophets, the Psalms, everything that Yahweh says, everything Yahweh does, Yahweh's very nature is Sadak. He's upright. He's right. He's vindicating. It is an essential aspect of his nature, which is why the Psalm is declaring it as such. And then, as we have discussed now on several programs, and I'm going to continue to repeat it because I think it is really important. Sadak, which is to vindicate, it is to make not guilty, it is to make those who would be bowed down being judged upright in Yahweh's presence. It's the very term that Yahweh declared was the most descriptive characterization of Dod. He said that Dod Haya Sadak. Dod exists vindicated. Dod exists righteous. He exists right and upright. And so when Dod is now applying the term that Yahweh applies to Dod, to Yahweh, and then immediately transitions into the very means that Yahweh uses to accomplish this. You see, it's one thing for God to say you're vindicated, you're not guilty. It's another thing altogether for him to do it in such a way that he himself is Sadak while doing it, upright, righteous, right, consistent. And that's the trick of the whole thing. That's why his plan of salvation is designed the way it is. God could be capricious and say, listen, I'm God. And because I've got, I can do any damn thing I want to do. And therefore, if I want to say that somebody is perfect and innocent and not guilty just because I feel like it, he could do that. But he can't do it and be Sadak. He can't do it and himself be perfect. The only way that God can declare guys as corrupt as Larry. And now that Larry's not on the phone, I can talk to him about him this way. And Larry, I just saw you you call in.
Actually, he's on.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was saying.
He just called in.
I know. That's
my phones were down. You know, this is what happens with when you got voice over IP. You know, this is all there is.
That does happen.
Drop the phone. Drop the phone.
The only way that Yahweh, to continue my example, can declare someone like myself vindicated, and not himself corrupt himself in the process. In other words, without him being wrong in the process. The only way that he can declare me innocent and be right is for him to do something that makes me right. You see, if God simply said, yeah, you know, Larry, as far as I'm concerned, you're perfect, you're not guilty, you're vindicated, and he did nothing
other
than...
I figured he wasn't paying attention, but yeah, okay.
Correct. That is correct. Yeah. But if he says, I have a plan by which if Larry, if you take advantage of my offer, I'm going to ransom you. I'm going to do everything that's required to perfect you and make you immortal. Since your behavior would cause you to be mortal and die, I'm going to pay the price to make you immortal. I myself am going to accept that consequence. And then the penalty of being the Larianator is to be separated from God. He says, okay, I will myself separate myself, my soul, from Yahweh to pay the price, to pay the penalty for what Larry and Yada have done. And in so doing, Yahweh can be just because he can say, I myself paid the penalty. I paid the price for me to make the declaration on behalf of Larry that he's perfect, that he's immortal. And the way that he does that is the second statement here. And your means to achieve justice and resolve disputes, your misbot, are therefore upright and straightforward, yashar. So one of the great ways to verify that your translations of Yahweh's testimony are consistent with his message is to render translations in context. And if this says, Yahweh, you are upright, you are righteous, you are vindicating, you are tzedak, and your means to achieve justice and resolve disputes, your misvot, are therefore upright and straightforward, you've got a pretty valid proof that your rendering of Yahweh's testimony is consistent with his intent.
It helps when it fits his nature and his plan, too.
Yes, and when it's confirmed by his testimony, particularly in context. When Yahweh has an inspired statement that has him be equivalent to Tzedak, and then he has, in the next statement, misfot being the means to Tzedak, and it being Yasar, which is upright and straightforward, at that point, you can be pretty certain that misfot is not, so many people, if you read English translations, misfot is almost always translated judgment. As like God is judging the Tzedak. But you see,
that's got to be one of the poorest translations of all.
Of course, because God is judging, I'm going to tell you, if Tzedak is judgment, or misfot, excuse me, is judgment, then Dod is most certainly not going to be Tzedak. I'm not going to be Tzedak. Larry, you're not going to be Tzedak. JB, maybe you would be, but the rest of us, we're in trouble.
Hi.
So
sure,
that's the whole beauty of Yah's misbot is means to exonerate us, means to achieve, resolve disputes while being just, is that he can be upright, he can be righteous, and still vindicate us. It's the ultimate plan. Pesach and Matzah, leading to Bukurim and Shavuah, is the best plan ever conceived by anyone. In terms of merciful, in terms of generous, in terms of brilliant, in terms of caring, it's the best plan ever conceived in the entire universe. Pesach and Matzah leading to Bukurim and Shavuot. It doesn't get any better than that. That is the misfot. It's the means for Yahweh to remain just and yet resolve these disputes and to make us Tzedak while remaining Tzedak.
It's from our perspective, it's the best thing in the world, because, or in the universe, I guess we should say, because he took the beating that we were due. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's ever stepped up for me like that.
No.
I mean, and never will, you know. Yeah. And no person that I know has ever done all that. And, you know, sadly, you know, the Christian myth, although they claim they're not working for their salvation, they have to be. Because what they're saying is that it's my pure intent and the purity of my heart, and look how pure I think, right?
Right.
I mean, there's this,
right.
There's got to be some thinking to it or something.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you know, and then this kind of a thing, you know, for somebody to endure Pesach and Matzah on our behalf, that the individual doing so is either a glutton for punishment or he has a vested interest in assisting those that are benefiting from his sacrifice. And that is to say that this notion that God made the Pesach and Matzah sacrifice for everyone is ludicrous. Why would he pay such a tremendous ransom in price for the Muslim jihadist who's selling little girls so they can be raped?
Yeah, he'd want to really get to know them, or Ted Bundy, for
right.
instance. Or
he'd have to be a glutton for punishment if that's the case. But if he's doing it for his children, if he's doing it for those who are participating in the covenant, then he's a dad doing what loving fathers do.
Right. And he would have to be more than a glutton for punishment.
Sense.
He would have to be stupid.
Right.
Stupid
versus appropriate. If he is doing
it
only for his covenant children, then what he's doing is exactly what every loving father would choose to do if we could. We can't, you know, we can sacrifice things that, you know, we can sacrifice our health and our lives sometimes to aid and abet and save our children. It's what really loving parents would do on behalf of their children. So it makes sense as our father and as the father of the covenant. It makes no sense for mankind as a whole. Really important too.
Yeah, I'm going to endure this. I'm going to go through this. Also, we can be in a place that is exactly like the place we're in now. Only everyone's immortal.
Yeah. Now, by
so
the way,
you're going to take what we have now and make it worse.
That's correct. Because we're going to have the all the negative influences of religion and politics and militarism and patriotism, but for all time with vastly more empowered individuals.
Well,
wow.
You know, we also, you know, there's a lot of, you know, the copy edits, as we know, in the witness writings. I mean, they're just absolutely horrid.
Yes.
And a lot of things taken out of context very intentionally, and you'll get a lot of them. They'll point to Yao Kanan and say, "He that believeth in me shall be saved," you know. But, you know, he kind of...
yeah, it's actually pistis, then. So it's he who trusts and relies on me will be saved.
But then,
I just ask you
even
this question,
further,
sorry, how
he
is
said,
possible?
How do you do...
Yeah,
right,
how do you
says,
trust
do you...
and rely on someone? Because he was speaking Hebrew, so he didn't say pistis anyway. He would have used Amon. But how do you trust and rely on somebody whose name you don't know, whose words you don't pay any attention to, and whose testimony you completely ignore, and whose behavior you don't understand?
Well, not only that, he said, how do you say you believe in me and not do what I do? Which was walk through the Moed Mikra.
Correct.
You know, in Yasha Yad says, "For indeed he was cut off and separated away from the land of the living because of the revolt of who? My family, to whom every stroke was due." So he was taking the strokes due the families. That's so right there.
It
so unless
cut
you're
off
adopted
from the land
into
of the
family.
Living. Did it say that God was killed?
No.
Did it say that man is going to kill God?
No.
Can't happen. You know, Larry, I know you were at one time a bodybuilder. You used to train bodybuilders. You're in pretty good shape. Special forces kind of a guy. You go mano a mano with God. Do you think you could kill him?
Is that a rhetorical question? Yeah. Help.
I know who my money is going to be on in that match.
Yeah.
You got that
first of all,
right.
God's immortal. He can't die. What he said is that he would be cut off from the land of the living. His soul was cut off from the land of the living. It went to Sheol. That is absolutely true. Cut off and separated from the land of the living. Christians would have you believe that their God died for them. Christians would have you believe that...
I know, it's such a bizarre, thought.
That man could kill a God who can save you through his death.
Wow.
First of all, if man can kill your God, you don't have much of a God. And I need to understand why you think your God dying absolves you of your sin. And what do you think happened on the Sabbath, on the Shabbat? Did he die on a Friday and then just hang around decomposing on the Shabbat? What, was he just not very efficient to know how to use the time?
Decompose for a bit, see what it's like.
Well, what was he doing? That's the very next verse there. He says, when as a concession he shall render his nephesh, or soul, as a guilt offering for sin. That's what he was doing. He was in Sheol, rendering his soul as an offering, a guilt offering. It was a ransom. That's
now
what
that
was going
that,
on there.
Now that you've read that, I want to make a statement that I would never have made as much as 5 to 10 years ago. But now I'm absolutely convinced. I am absolutely convinced, personally. I'm not encouraging you. I'm not going to tell you you have to come to the same conclusion. But I'm going to tell you something that I'm absolutely convinced of. That there's a reason we do not have a credible transcript of from the eyewitnesses. There is a reason that there is not a Hebrew text correctly and accurately and reliably present what happened in 33 CE from any of the disciples or from anyone else. There is a reason that we don't have anything that is remotely reliable. And you know what that reason is?
Yeah, we were supposed to be in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms looking for all the answers. I get that.
And did you just not read a vastly superior eyewitness account that provided the detail of precisely what happened in 33 CE?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was provided us in a book named Yashayah that absolutely and unequivocally proves that it was inspired and trustworthy through its prophecy. Correct?
That's correct. Yes.
So since the Mizmor, written by this same fellow whose psalm we are considering, 22 and 88, and since Yashayah, really from all the way through about the mid-40s, all the way through about the late 50s in terms of chapters, presents an eyewitness account of what would occur and now has occurred, why would we need an eyewitness account?
We don't.
We don't. Do you think that there is a reason? Let's just say that, and I have a favorite part of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. I actually have, I have a favorite part of the so-called Christian New Testament. I actually do have a favorite part. Happens to be the book of Matanya, and it is 5, 6, and 7, which is called the Sermon on the Mount. And I also like 23 and 24, which are the attack on the religious community followed by the Olivet Discourse. I happen to really like those. I'm glad that I have them. But, Larry, do I need to have the affirmation of Yahusha that the letters which comprise the Torah remain true so long as the heavens and earth exist?
That's what it says, but no, you don't need.
Do I need?
You don't need a. You don't need the witness writings. No,
no,
no.
Because does Yahweh say that?
Yes,
he says. Does Yahweh say that his Torah is eternally true? Do I need Yahweh to tell Yosha to tell me that anybody who tries to annul the Torah or add to the Torah is a liar, is a wolf in sheep's clothing that you ought not trust. Do I need him to tell me that, or does Yahweh already tell me that in every imaginable way?
Oh, he tells me that over and over and over. He tells me
all
these things over.
Right. Do I need Yahweh to tell me that Yahweh is our merciful Father and that he provides the gift of life, or does Yahweh already tell us that? Do I need Yahweh to tell me that the way is narrow and few find it to life, and that the way is broad and very popular that leads to the death and destruction of the soul? Or are we told that 1,000 different times over, including in the two tablets by Yahweh himself?
I was just about to say, directly in the Ten Gemar.
Yes. Do I need Yahusha in the second part, where I read throughout the Sermon on the Mount, to tell me that Paul was a false prophet, that he was a wolf in sheep's clothing, that he was the lowly and little one that will be expunged and expelled from heaven and spoken of in heaven as a scumbag? Do I need his testimony? You already know that.
Yeah. You know he's in trouble. Yeah.
I can look at Zabarim 18.
Right, or 13. Right, it's right there.
Yeah.
What I've come to realize is there's a reason that we don't have anything that's reliable. Now, I'm going to tell you that I really do love the book of Matanyah. I like it from beginning to end. There's just some parts that I just think are treasures because they reinforce and reaffirm things that are so important to know. But is all of it already available to us?
Yes.
And as wonderful as Matanyah's presentation of what occurred on Pesach, Matzah, and Makkorim with the Passover meal and the service of the Passover lamb with the events of the Shabbat and the first day of the week, with all of that, isn't the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, don't they provide a vastly superior rendering of what would and now has occurred on those days?
Oh, well, yes.
Yeah.
And that's why the Christian New Testament has done so much harm. Not to mention, you know, you might like the statements he made on the Mount, and that's fine. And I do, too. He points right to the Torah, Prophet, and Psalms.
Yeah.
But I have to tell you, there's also riddled throughout all these witness writings, they've copy-edited it in a caricature. You know, where people are running around and they're just loving everyone and here, hit me on the side of the head and I'll turn my other side to head.
Let me tell you, Larry, the errors that are manifest in Matanyah are far, far fewer than the errors that are manifest in the other three biographical presentations. I mean, it's not even remotely similar in terms of the accuracy. Matanyah, I think, is a fairly accurate book for a lot of reasons.
He was probably a lot harder to copy edit, you know, because he stayed on track. That I think that may have had something to do with it. But, you know, they copy edited wherever they could.
Yeah, I think that the reason that it's pretty good is that for the most part, Christians don't like what Yahusha said in Matanyah. They hate the Sermon on the Mount because it destroys their religion. They hate his attack on the religious community in the 23rd chapter because the angry Yahusha that is railing against religion doesn't fit the all-loving God that wants all of his little children to come to him. And of course, his statements in the Olivet Discourse in Matanyah 24 completely destroy Pauline Christianity. So the combination of that and the fact that for the first couple of centuries it was written in Hebrew, I think have caused it to be much better preserved than the other books, which were much more heavily copy edited. That being the case, we don't need any of it. As a matter of fact, if not for the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, particularly the Torah, which tells us that the Passover lamb is to be incinerated that night, and none of it is to be left over to the following day. Without that, would we have any way of knowing why no one recognized Yosha on Bikkurim?
No, we wouldn't, because it appears they're talking about a physical resurrection.
Except one of an individual whom the closest people to him didn't recognize.
No, I'm saying you throw in the traditions.
Right.
And what it is that they're pushing, and you don't think about the fact that no one recognized him. You don't think about it. I know I said in Christian church, I never thought about it.
Never dawned on you. Right.
No.
And you would never understand what took place on the Shabbat. And you would never have any clue about matzah. You would have no understanding of the correlation between the Passover lamb and what took place on Pesach.
No, and you wouldn't even understand Bikkurim. You wouldn't get it.
No.
You didn't know that was being adopted in the family. You don't
and
have
why
any
Bikkurim,
clue of anything.
Which means firstborn children, occurred on the first day of the week, but not Sunday. And not Easter. It's Bikkurim. Firstborn children.
Yeah,
the
first day of the week.
The
they just went. Yeah, they just went 1 through 7, and it was simple as that, and they didn't give praise to Sunday or Moon Day or,
no,
you know, any of
the
other
days.
The days
of the week were all numbers. That was the first day of the week, and the first day of the week was the natural time for a celebration of Bikkurim, because the most important work was done on the Shabbat, on the seventh day of the week. So with matzah being fulfilled on a natural Shabbat, Bikkurim, firstborn children, is going to occur on the first day of the week. But if you're going to celebrate those days, which of those days is the most important to celebrate?
It would be the Shabbat. It would be matzah.
Yeah, matzah.
Yeah, sure.
You know, if you're going to pick one of them, now I understand they're a cohesive whole, but if you're going to pick one of them, the one not to pick is the crucifixion day, is Pesach, because if you pick it at the exclusion of matzah, your soul is immortal, and you're going to be eternally estranged from God. That's why Christianity is such a diabolical scheme. But if you pick matzah, and because you've celebrated and observed matzah, and you've been vindicated, tzedak, by Yahweh, because you've observed matzah, even if you die your earthly death, God's going to say, wait a minute, that dude, he's perfect. Come on. You know, you'll be part of the family. So, I mean, the day that's important is matzah. And Bikkurim is really nothing more than the result, the conclusion, the byproduct of Pesach and matzah. You're immortal, you're perfect, you're adopted. It's the byproduct of the whole thing. It is, though, beyond the byproduct. It is the ultimate spiritual birth. It's when our mortal souls, our nefesh, and it's you just cited the passage in Yashaya that spoke of his nefesh being separated from the land of the living on matzah. Well, on Bikkurim, his nefesh, his soul, is reunited with Yahweh's spirit. And that causes the soul, the personality, the character of the individual to be reunited with Yah's spirit and therefore empowered, therefore immortal, therefore perfect. That's the whole idea.
Yeah, that's what he said. His soul finds the light. That's what.
Right.
Out of the toil of his soul, he will see the light and find satisfaction. And, of course, the light's the spirit.
That's why we are asked on 4 of the Mikra to answer Yahweh's invitation and to come into the presence of the feminine manifestation of his light, just as his soul was enveloped in the feminine manifestation of Yahweh's light, the set-apart spirit. When your perspective is right, when you base your understanding of Yahweh and what he's offering on the Torah, everything makes sense. It all fits into place. It's a beautiful plan. And that's why he says, Yahweh, you're upright, you're righteous, you're right, you're vindicating. And your means to achieve justice and resolve disputes is therefore upright and straightforward. This is the harmony of the whole thing, the beauty of it, the elegance of it, the consistency of it, the generosity of it. You have completely laid out Sawa. You have provided and articulated. And by the way, this is written in the Peel Perfect. And the perfect here is really important. That means that when you, you know, the difference between the perfect and the imperfect in a verb, the perfect is ongoing. Excuse me, the imperfect is ongoing. And the perfect is a completed act. So when it says here, you have completely laid out, that is a completed act. That means that Yahweh's plan that he has laid out for Tzedakah, for vindication, is complete. That means you don't need, in fact, can't have a Christian New Testament. That means you don't need and can't have what I, Paul, say. He's saying that the plan in the Torah, which Yahweh lays out his means to vindication, is done. It's completely laid out. It's nothing can be added to it. Nothing should be added to it. He wrote that in the perfect. It's important to look at the conjugations along the way. You have completely laid out. You have provided and articulated your just, fair, unwavering, vindicating, restoring, and enduring testimony, an exceedingly reliable, totally trustworthy, and always dependable nature. When Dode makes this statement about Yahweh has completely laid out and completely articulated and provided his vindicating and enduring testimony, what is he talking about?
He's talking about the Torah over and over and over and over. You know, I don't know how many times just in this psalm he talks about the enduring testimony, the eternal testimony, and words like that. I mean, it's just over and over and over. You'd have to believe Dode was a liar.
Right. Dode wrote this. Could you find a Christian gospel?
No, God's spell.
When Dode wrote this, was there the book of Galatians? Was there the book of Romans?
Yeah,
when Dode wrote this, was there even Yahweh?
There wasn't even an Empire State Building.
No, there wasn't a Washington, D.C.
You mean he wasn't walking around with his King James Bible?
No Vatican, no King James Bible, no Bible, as a matter of fact. When he wrote this...
What did he ever do?
Yeah, when he wrote this, he may have had access to the book of Job. May have. He doesn't mention it, but he may have had access to it. When he wrote this, there was no Kings or Chronicles. They didn't exist. When he wrote this, there was the Torah, and there was the book of Yahusha. And that's all he had. And so everything that he has figured out, that he is sharing with us as an insight, every statement he makes is regarding the Torah. And so he's saying...
It's stunning that anybody could have figured that. It's stunning.
Yeah,
but, he stayed right on it, and I believe he had some help.
Yeah, I know that given the same text, like without Yashayah and without the benefit of hindsight, I wouldn't have had a prayer to figure out what he figured out. I could have spent a lifetime on it. Hebrew could be my first language. I could have a perfect copy of the Torah. I know I wouldn't be able to figure it out. I am really glad that
Dode's help.
Pardon?
I needed Dode's help.
Yeah, me too. But, you know, in all fairness to Dode, while Dode was invested the time, while Dode was insanely brilliant, Yahweh helped. I mean, most of the insights this cat came up with.
Obviously.
Yahweh said, okay, you know, I love you. I'm crazy about your passion. I appreciate your devotion to being observant and to thinking and this going on this voyage of discovery. I'm going to go on with you. I'm going to provide insights along the way. And we know that for certain because I am absolutely certain that Dode did not write the Mizmor Rise 22 and 88 about crucifixion, about the fulfillment of Pesach, Matzah, and Bikkurim. Based upon his own understanding. Yahweh chose that chose this fellow to reveal his insights and his prophetic witness through. So, you know, he was in the right place at the right time with the right attitude, and Yahweh was looking for someone that he could communicate through, and Dode was the perfect candidate. So he is saying that, you know, you have completely laid out, and this is Sawa, Sadak Ida. Sadak is vindication. Sadak is right and upright. Sadak is innocence. But Ida is testimony, witness. But it's not just testimony and witness. Ida is a combination of restoring and eternal. So eternal witness, restoring testimony. But here he is modifying restoring testimony and eternal witness, Ida, with Sadak. He's using Sadak as a modifier. So the restoring testimony and the enduring witness is vindicating. It makes a person righteous. It's honest. It's right. It's upright. It's fair. It's trustworthy. And so the first sentence here is that you have completely laid out. In a time past, you have said everything that needs to be said. You have completely and totally provided and articulated your just, fair, unwavering, vindicating, restoring, and enduring testimony. And so this notion that the Torah cannot save is poppycock. This notion that God needed a moron like Paul to come up with a new plan is stupid. You know, Yahweh says Dode is righteous. He's, you know, when he comes back, he has told us that he's going to have the kingdom of Dode, not the kingdom of Paul. He's told us, never said that Paul was righteous. He said Dode is righteous. You know, if you look at Yah's prophetic testimony through Yashayah and Yirmiyah and Zechariah and throughout his prophets, he's constantly referencing not only his love for Dode, but how the very kingdom of Dode is going to be manifest again during the millennial Shabbat. And so Dode is the person he's calling out to say, I love him. He gets it. He's my guy. You know, if we want to be counted in the same company, we need to have our view of the Torah to be match his, which is that God's laid out everything that we need to know. And that anybody else has got a different plan, discard them, reject them. This statement is the antithesis of Paul's letters.
Well, you know, it's pretty hard to defend a new concept, like a new religion. First of all, Yahweh never invented any religion I'm aware of, but much less a new religion. And then you take this new religion, and what they really do, it acts like a leech, because it's leeching off a part of a part of a truth.
Yeah, that's funny, too.
It's just a leech.
It's a leech, but you take this new religion. Yahweh communicated his Torah in Hebrew. He chose Hebrews as his chosen people. All of his revelation is in Hebrew. And then you want me to believe that he created a religion based upon the transliteration of a Greek word?
That in and of itself, I mean, if you're a wordsmith, is insane.
Oh, it's just
and
stupid.
If you really look at it from that, yeah, that's insane. It's totally insane.
But, you know, think about it. You know, you talked about, you know, why would God need Paul to revise his plan? But the fact is, you know, if God's intent was to reach as many people as possible, if he was interested in quantity over quality, Paul's plan is a much better plan than God's.
Of
but
course.
If you're interested in quality over quantity, God's plan's got you beat.
Yeah, that's right.
And
where
God's interest is.
Well,
is
if you're also interested in that which is trustworthy and reliable, Paul Flam. He is completely untrustworthy and completely unreliable, and Yahweh's testimony is completely trustworthy and reliable. Personally, when it comes to my soul, I'm gonna prioritize trustworthy and reliable.
You'd rather not risk it. Yeah, like you're out in Vegas or something doing a million to one shot, which is exactly what would be going on. It'd be like spinning the wheel. It'd be horrible.
Oh,
you know, how would you like to be judged? I mean, how would you like that? I mean, I've had people tell me, one day you're going to be in front of your maker and you're going to be judged. And I said, well, that's bullshit. I'm not going to be judged at all. I said, you are.
Yeah.
I said, you know, speak for yourself, buddy.
Yeah, man. I'm part of the covenant. I know what the benefits of the covenant are. And one of the benefits of the covenant is I'm not going to be judged. I've already been declared innocent. So thank you very much, but no. But I'll be there.
Yeah, have a bad day, pal.
Yeah, for your court appearance, if you'd like, I'll be happy to be there. You know, it was somebody wrote. I think it was a correspondence that you were in, and you were trying to explain to the person that the Christian God, which wants to be feared, and Christian clerics. This person went to a cleric to have them. Explain to you that God really does want to be feared. And the Christian cleric that would tell you that God is all love, and yet he wants you to fear him.
Fear him,
The devotee of the Christian cleric who's going to communicate the Christian cleric's testimony so that you can prove that the Larianator is wrong, isn't smart enough to figure out, wait a minute, I can't love what I fear. How can God be love if he wants us to fear him? Somewhere, somebody is not telling me the truth. Either God
somebody
cannot
actually
be love,
told you that?
Or I can't.
Somebody
yeah.
did that? They,
oh, yeah. Oh, in fact, wow. it was Richard who sent me a letter. It said that this correspondence actually started with you, where you demonstrated that the person was lost. And then I think Richard picked up the battle. And then this individual tattled to his cleric. That Richard and you were completely wrong, and that God really does want to be feared. And of course,
I'm going to have to go down to Texas and get me a pair of boots so I can quake in them. Wow.
Yeah. But it's the entirety of Christianity. Why would you believe someone that told you your God died when God is immortal? Why would you believe someone that told you that God's name was Jesus when there was no one named Jesus until the 17th century? Why would you believe someone that tells you your God's last name is Christ when he only communicates in Hebrew and that Christ is not a Hebrew title? Why would you believe someone that told you that your God was born on Christmas Day? Why would you believe someone that told you that Easter is a godly holiday when it's Babylonian? Why would you believe someone who tells you that there's a Trinity when God says he's one? Why would you believe someone that says that God has a church when he said no such thing? Why would you believe someone that tells you that God wants to be worshipped on Sunday when he says, I want you to take the seventh day of the week off, the Shabbat, and revel in your relationship with me?
Yeah, and doesn't have anything to do with worship on any level.
Why would you believe a God who said his covenant was eternal, who then authorized someone to demean him and say, no, there's a second covenant, a new covenant, and the new covenant replaces the old one because the old one enslaves. Why would you believe anyone who would tell you any of those things?
Those are all good questions to ask the religious initiates, because I don't believe any of them, and I don't think anybody, if they rationally thought about what Dode saying here as an example, would buy any of it. I mean, if you were in a room and you had a guy like Paul on one side and you had a guy like Dode on the other side, who would you be listening to?
Yeah, matter of fact, when Dode, just thinking about this and Christian lies, did Dode say, Yahweh, you are the Lord?
Never.
No, what he says, Yahweh, you are Tzedak, you are the upright one. You know, he never infers that Yahweh is the Lord. You know, this myth in the 23rd Psalm, the Lord is my shepherd. No, it doesn't say that. says Yahweh is my shepherd. You know, that this notion that that God is the very title that he applies to Satan, it's ludicrous. You know, I don't know how many times as a Christian you have to be lied to before you'll stop trusting those who are lying to you. Bottom line. Yahweh.
You know what, since you were talking about a letter, and I want to point something out here while I'm thinking about it. There was a letter I read earlier this week. I don't always get into my email, but it was about me saying somebody was Satan. And, in fact, his wife sent me a message saying, calling my husband Satan. I never call anybody Satan. But what I will say is that if a messenger comes to you and they start using terms like Saint John and sending you to pictures that have sun halos in them and all this religious imagery, I will say that that Moloch is now really a satanic demon, and that messenger was not from Yahweh. That's what I said.
Yeah.
Okay? Just to get that straight.
Yeah, I happen to have been CC'd on all of that, and the person sent me the same material and asked me what I thought, and my response was that I'm not going to respond to religious imagery. The imagery of Saint John with his halos does not resonate with me.
I can't imagine Yahweh sending anybody to such a picture,
right,
and saying, yep, this is,
and then when you begin it by sending me a video that talks about UFOs and chemtrails, you know, you got strike three before we even begin. I didn't accuse them of being demonic. I just simply said that based upon the video you sent me on chemtrails and on UFOs and the images of religious images of a Saint John with all of his halos, I'm not interested. There is nothing here that resonates with me. There's nothing I can comment on. If you think, as you claim, that Yahweh has chosen you as a prophet and has revealed something to you that is not revealed in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, I'm more than willing to entertain what it is that he has shared with you. But not if your justification is religious imagery, chemtrails, and UFOs.
That was the
same letter of the person that wrote me and said that you had called him Satan.
Just so we're straight there, I didn't call anybody Satan.
I understand. Listen,
yeah.
I
just don't.
Larry, I look at the way that you, for the most part, engage with people, and the way that that Yahusha engaged with people. And although I will tell you that I think Yosha was a little more articulate than you are, probably a bit more. He was actually a lot meaner than you are, a lot meaner. Now he's in a position.
I'll take my hat off to him for that.
Yeah,
really.
But he was meaner. If you particularly if you read, in fact, every time that he's being confronted by clergy, he's either yanking their chain, just toying with them, or he is lambasting them, absolutely roasting them, flailing them alive with words, and roasting those scumbags. So, I'm really comfortable with somebody. You know, if somebody comes and they say, you know, I want to learn. Can you tell me what you know? And if they're willing to invest the time, you know, if they just say, can you summarize what you believe in five sentences? I'm going to say, go away. But if somebody is genuinely wants to know, how did you come up with Yahweh? You know, how? Why do you think that the Torah is the reliable and enduring, vindicating word of Yahweh, and still manifest in terms of being credible in our lives? If somebody wants to know, I'll be happy to point them in the right direction. I'll work with them. I'll communicate with them. But if somebody wants to promote Christianity or Paul or Islam or socialist secular humanism or UFOs, I don't have the time of day for them. I just do not care. Now, in the past, I might have toyed with them a bit, you know, played the Yahusha card, toyed with them a bit, and then condemned them. I don't anymore. Almost universally now, I just hit delete because it's just not worth the aggravation. It's not worth the time. I have no issue with somebody who confronts religious apologists. I think it's totally and completely deserved and appropriate. So this statement here, folks, is so powerful. You have completely laid out, completely, totally, provided and articulated your just, fair, unwavering, vindicating, restoring, and enduring testimony, and exceedingly reliable, totally trustworthy, and always dependable nature. One of the things that struck me years ago, with all of the people that would say, you know, I'm not going to believe in God unless he reveals himself right to me. If there's a God, then he can sure as hell show himself to me. One of the things I came to realize a long time ago is he did. He is. You want to see him? Read his testimony. He and his testimony in Hebrew are one and the same. I am reading right now, I'm looking at his testimony in Hebrew, and I'm seeing him. His Torah represents him. He is his Torah. They're inseparable. The word of Yahweh is Yahweh. You know, he's a spiritual entity, and therefore he does not have a tangible, material nature. You know, if he were to come through the window right now of my study, well, he'd blow it to bits because it'd be so much energy. But he can come and engage with me and have a conversation with me and reveal his nature to me and reveal his offering, and we can have just a grand old time together, enjoying one another's company. Well, I observe his testimony. It's all there. He's right there. Personal.
Yeah, God made himself known to those who are interested in knowing him.
Correct. And he talks to those who are interested in listening to him. And he, you know, he engages in their lives. You know, one of the things that I did all the time as a Christian, I always said, God, I wanted to know your will for my life. What I was really saying is, could you help me in this class and pass this test and get the pretty girl so that, you know, I can date the really pretty girl, and I want to succeed in the next sporting event. That's what I really meant. But, you know, and then, you know, I want to make the next sale so that I prosper in my job. That was what I meant when I said, God, I want to know your will for my life. The fact of the matter is, I don't need to ask God's will for my life. He told me what his will was for my life. It's the same will that he has for your life, Larry, and for yours, JB. It's the same will that he has for all of our lives, that we participate in his covenant family, enjoy his company, listen to what he has to say, observe what he has shared with us, spend eternity with us.
But it takes the effort, the same effort it would take to have a relationship with anyone else.
Yes.
It takes effort. You've got to dig for it a little bit. You really do have to dig. You know, we were talking last week or maybe 2 weeks ago. I think it was last week. You know, what it is that Yahweh does. You know, how he doesn't lay out, here, do step one, do step two, do step three,
right,
like that. He wants people who are thoughtful. He wants people, you know, with an IQ over 80. I really believe that. I mean, I don't know that you
want to
be around
that.
Well, yeah, I think so too. Yeah, because those had to be at least 175, maybe 200.
I'm making a point.
And I'm glad, because I ain't interested in that either.
He's not saying anybody has to be a genius, but they have to be a thoughtful person, and a thoughtful person that's got the ability to make connections and think about those connections. I am amazed with all the corruption that you can see out there. There are people out there that don't really see any corruption, as an example.
Right.
It floors me. Yeah. I see the inculcation of corrupt platforms instilled in every facet of society now.
Yes, every human institution. all rotten.
Every story, all of it, and it's all designed
to mislead. Every media report just full of, absolutely full of rubbish.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's it is a absolute mess out there, and there's only one testimony that you can eternally trust. Yahweh's Torah. That's what Dode is saying. Always dependable.
That's what being upright or Sadat's about. He's the only honest guy in the room. That's
right.
What Dode's saying.
That's what Dode is saying.
Exactly
what
he's
the
saying.
Only honest guy in the room. Did Dode hear saying, you know, everybody, I Dode, tell you that you ought to listen to me. That if anybody tells you anything, even a messenger from heaven, other than what I'm telling you, let him be damned.
Did he talk like Paul? No,
yeah.
Not
no.
at all.
No, who is he saying here is upright? Who is he saying here is reliable? Who is he saying is totally dependable?
Yahweh. Right. You're the only honest guy in the room. You're Sadak.
Right. And he's saying that, Yahweh, your testimony and you are equivalent. You are your testimony, and that's what makes you and your testimony so reliable, so vindicating, so enduring, everlasting. Yeah, it's the only honest shot in the room. And, you know, it's an interesting game. It's this is a game where if you play, everybody who plays wins. And you don't just win a little bit. You win the jackpot. Everybody who engages and plays wins the jackpot. You inherit the universe.
Yeah, no zero-sum game here.
No.
You know, I was thinking about that, too. You know, I was getting out of the shower tonight. I'm serious. I was getting out of the shower tonight. And, you know, this is all on the same subject. And I was thinking, what is it that's so beautiful about life? I mean, what's really at the root of what's the wine of life, you know? And I thought, it really is relationships.
Absolutely.
It really is.
Yeah.
It absolutely is relationships
right.
when you get right down to it. And the more people that we bring in to the eternal covenant, or, you know, we share
right.
words with, and they make a choice
right.
to jump in there,
the better.
You know, the more enriching relationships we have.
Correct.
And since it's for all eternity,
yeah,
I want to see as many people as possible.
Yeah.
Because I know these are all going to be bright people that are
yeah,
going to be
enjoying. And that's the beauty
of
the whole thing. Not only does everyone who plays, the engages in the covenant, win the grand prize, the more people who win the grand prize, the better. That makes the prize all the more grand.
Absolutely, it does.
Yeah. You know, the thing that brings Dode to tears and brings me to tears is this realization that so many people have been beguiled by absolute morons like Muhammad and Paul and Barack Obama and just absolute idiots. They've been beguiled by fools, and they have chosen to believe these morons when Yahweh is offering them the jackpot. Yahweh is offering them a sure bet that has them benefiting in every possible way. And you say, why do people prefer the lie to the truth?
But tradition.
Yeah, the truth is
really
unpopular.
Tradition. Well, you know, yeah, it's nice to be popular, you know, and you've got certain traditions where if you stand up against an obvious lie,
mm-hmm.
if it's popular in a tradition, you're the guy that gets called down.
Yeah. So here's Dode taking the same position that we were just articulating. My anger is beyond frustrating because they have totally ignored and improperly responded to your word, making them my adversaries and someone to be opposed. And that therein lies the problem of religion, of Pauline Christianity, of Mohammedan Islam, of academic socialist secular humanism, is they all ignore and improperly respond to Yahweh's Torah, his word, his Dabar. And as a result, they are our adversaries. They are someone to oppose. You know, God didn't tell us to go off and love everybody. He didn't tell us that we shouldn't judge others. That's exactly what Dode is doing here. God loves Dode because Dode hates those who are opposed to his testimony. You know, God hates
those
who are opposed to his testimony.
Don't you think that benefited the clergy, though, why they were robbing people up and down and sideways, that, you know, you shouldn't judge this?
Of course. Yeah, of course. And Dode is saying, man, have at it. They are my adversaries because they're opposed to you. They're opposed to your testimony. And because they have ignored and improperly responded to your testimony, they're my enemies. That is exactly the view that God wants of all of us. You know, when whatever walk of life you're in, but if you just go, let's take it right down to the heart, to family. If somebody is inappropriately responding to your son or daughter, they're your adversary. Now, in the case of Yahweh, as his family, if somebody is inappropriately responding to Yahweh's testimony, as Pauline Christians do, as Mohammedan Muslims do, then they're our adversary. We're in this together. We're family. We have to support one another, which means that you need to bow your back and be opposed to those who are harmful to the family.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what it means to be loving. Right. That's what it means to be loving. Telling people the truth is more loving than deceiving them and telling, oh, it's all right. Every you know, spoke in the wheel all leads to God, and we ought to embrace Islam and Christianity and socialist secular humanism. We should all just coexist together. No, that's being hateful.
Sure, you're just supporting ignorance, and you're just advancing more of it. And the last thing Yahweh is ignorant. His plan's totally brilliant.
Right. Don't promote lies. Tell the truth. Your word is exceedingly refining, purifying, and perfecting, perfectly purging and removing flaws and impurities. And your servant, your co-worker, genuinely loves it. So Yahweh's word here, this is Imrah. He's just used Dabar, your word. And Dabar is word or statement. Imrah is word or promise. So your promise. What are Yahweh's promises? His promise is that I will make you immortal. I will perfect you. I will adopt you. I will enrich you. I will empower you. It's the promises of the covenant, the benefits of the covenant. It's the promise of Pesach, Matzah, Bekodim, and Shavuah, the fulfilled Moed Mikre. And so he's saying here, your word, your promise, is exceedingly purifying, perfecting, perfectly purging, removing flaws and impurity. That's how we get to Tzedak. And your co-worker, your associate, genuinely loves it. I love Yahweh's plan. I think Yahweh's got a marvelous plan. What's not to love about the plan? As a beneficiary of Pesach, Matzah, and Bekodim, as a beneficiary of the promises of the covenant, what's not to love? If we were just judging on a fairness scale, I mean, this is a ramp where all of the goodness is rolling down from him to us. I mean, we are enormous beneficiaries here. You gotta love it. Of course, I guess you could fear it and then be religious. I am young and physically unimpressive, and I am poorly regarded. But yet, I have not overlooked nor neglected your precept, those instructions which you have entrusted to us to tell us how to properly respond to you. Boy, ain't that the proper perspective. You know, Dode is in the Michelangelo's David, you know, the religious version of David. First of all, of course, the David is uncircumcised. And, of course, the David has a Roman nose. But the David is, of course, made to look beautiful. What is Dode saying of himself here? I'm physically unimpressive. I'm not going to impress anybody with my stature. And he says, I'm even poorly regarded. That's what made him humble in terms of him saying, you know, God, you're not in love with me because I'm the most beautiful man ever. You're not in love with me because all men love me. You're in love with me because I have not overlooked nor neglected the means that you provided to respond to you. That's why Yahweh loves him. Yahweh provided pukurim, which are prescriptions that enable us to properly respond to him. Dod valued them, so Yahweh valued Dod. It's a real simple equation. You want God to love you? Love what Yahweh has communicated in his Torah, prophets, and Psalms. But it is interesting, of course, that the Dod here has the right attitude. He says, you know, there's nothing about me that's impressive. What causes God to say that I am righteous and upright and vindicated, and what causes Yahweh to say I'm going to establish the kingdom of Dod has nothing to do with Dod being impressive. Has nothing to do with Dod being highly regarded. It has all to do with Dod availing himself of what Yahweh offered. That's it. None of us are impressive on our own. We're made impressive because of what God has offered us.
And yet Dod did all these impressive things. You know,
oh, yeah, Dod had a hell of a resume.
Went out and took on the biggest guy in the army that was intimidating an entire army.
Yep.
You know, he's the guy that procured everything to build the temple.
Yep.
He did things that we can only imagine.
He established Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
Of
oh, man, yeah. He was the one king of Israel that Yahweh endorsed. The guy had a resume. The guy wrote songs that were so magnificently inspired that they became the Psalms of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. I mean, dude had a resume. And yet, what did he say about himself? I'm unimpressive. I'm not even well-regarded. Now, do you think that it's possible for any of us to have a resume that would compete with Dod's?
No.
It's not likely.
If he was unimpressive, what does it say about us?
A lot.
Yeah, but you know,
a lot is lacking. Yeah,
right,
a lot,
you know,
is
from our
lacking.
Heavenly Father's point of view, from Yahweh's point of view, we're magnificent. We're brilliant. We're loved. We're respected. We're cared for. From Yahweh's perspective, as the beneficiaries of his covenant, we are absolutely loved, valued. But not because of who we are, but because of what he has offered. Dod figured it out.
Yeah, he's valuing anybody that takes him up on the offer, which is really quite a deal. I mean, it's a deal. It's a deal of a lifetime.
Yeah.
You know?
Here's a concluding statement. Now, he's got more to say under this letter that is responsible for Tzedak vindication. He says, that which is righteous and vindicating, tzedakah, that which is truthful, just, fair, right, justifying, and acquitting, is always and eternally, la olam, righteous and vindicating, truthful, just, fair, right, and justifying. So your Torah is trustworthy, reliable, and enduring.
And there it is again.
Yeah. How in the world did a billion people succumb to Pauline Christianity when he says that the Torah is not vindicating, that the Torah can't save, and that the Torah had a shelf life that is now passé? It's been is now counterproductive. Dod, who
they didn't bother to look at the words, and the words that they looked at were impossible to understand. And I'll say that to anybody. It's more than important that somebody pick up Yada Yah or ITG and start studying it, so you understand you've been had, and that a Bible is not the Word of God. In fact, it's the antithesis of it in many, many cases.
It is. Do you know of these eight statements that we're considering right now? Six of the eight were copy edited by the rabbis. I mean, this happens to be a great example of where the Dead Sea Scrolls are really important. I mean, what we're sharing here is this refrain of eight verses brought to us by the Dead Sea Scrolls. So even though the Torah prophets and Psalms are valid enough that for the most part, you only have about one out of every 14 or 15 words that have been changed by the rabbis. Now, that's a lot, but, you know, it's at least workable at one out of every 14 or 15 words. You know, in the Christian New Testament, it's every other word. Sometimes it's every word.
Well, first of all, I can't understand it. I could never understand it. I could never, and I mean this.
Yeah.
I'm pretty good. You know, I could read on a second grade college level, second year college level, when I was in fourth grade.
Yeah.
Okay, that was my comprehension on all their testing and so forth. And I found it pretty easy to comprehend what I read. I could not read Christian Old Testament out of a Bible. I couldn't stomach it. I couldn't stand it. I could read two paragraphs and be hopelessly lost.
Yeah, and the New Testament is far worse.
Yeah, but so, I mean, it's just so bad.
Dodis is communicating something here that is essential for our understanding. And that is, if something is righteous, if it's vindicating, if it's truthful, then it's always and eternally righteous and vindicating. Something cannot be righteous one moment and not righteous the next moment. It can't be trustworthy for a while and then no longer trustworthy. I mean, that's the whole aspect of Pauline Christianity that is so stupid. This idea that God came up with a plan, but that plan is no longer valid. Notice that if God has a plan and his plan is, he doesn't use it. He said God came up with a plan. And he says his plan is trustworthy. And because his plan is trustworthy, it's always trustworthy. That which is reliable is always reliable. If it's not always reliable, then it is unreliable. You know, a parachute that works 9 times out of 10, is that parachute reliable?
No.
Are you going to use a parachute that works 9 times out of 10?
No, not going to happen.
You know, if that parachute works until it kills you, is it reliable?
No.
No, but that which is reliable is always reliable. That's what Dode is saying here. There is no way for the Torah to be reliable and then cease to be reliable. If it's reliable, it's always reliable. And it's always eternally righteous and vindicating. And what is he referring to here? He says, your Torah is trustworthy. It's reliable. It's enduring. Torah MF. Unwavering. Unchanging. Dependable. Everlasting. And Torah is his source of teaching, instruction, and place from which guidance and direction flow.
And yet Yahusha was always part of the plan.
Yes.
Always part of the plan, written right in there.
Explains
the whole business.
Right. Yes, someone has to provide the perfect Passover lamb to enable the benefits of Passover. Someone has to have their soul pay the price and go to Sheol to ransom us. Someone's got to be the firstborn child of Bukudim. Yosha is Yahweh doing these things for us so that we can be, with his set-apart spirit, enriched and empowered on Shavua. It's a wonderful plan. And that is the plan of the Torah. It's trustworthy and reliable and vindicating, so it's always and eternally trustworthy and reliable and vindicating. Your Torah is trustworthy. It's reliable. It's enduring. Why would God, who is eternal, who knows everything past, present, and future, who created the universe, who authored life, why would he come up with a plan that would, like the parachute that works 9 times out of 10, and when it stops working, it would never work again? Why would he do that? Do you think that if God could create the universe and life, that he can come up with a plan that is enduring?
I would guess so, and his words are enduring. He says not one of them will ever be passed by without achieving the effect it was meant to achieve. So it might be something to think about if you're a Christian out there.
Imagine being
a
Paul and saying that, you know, that God of the Torah, he was enslaving. He was mean-spirited. He cannot be trusted. He's incompetent when it comes to saving, and his plan does not work. But that's what he said. Why would anybody in their right mind then believe him when he says, I'm inspired in speaking for that same God. That same God came up with this new plan.
Well, I've got another question for you. How is it you can walk in the church and sit down in any church, any circus in town, and sometimes somebody in that circus is going to say, God's the same as he was yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Oh, really?
Yeah, then how is that possible that he has a New Testament? Why did he have Paul come up with an entirely different plan?
How did he invent a religious institution when he rails
popular.
Against religion?
He wanted to be
How did
more
he name
popular.
A book after a sun goddess?
Yeah. If he wanted to be popular, why did he say that 1 in 1,000... or even 1 in 1,000,000, there would be thousands who would avail themselves of his mercy. If he wanted to be popular, why did he perpetrate the flood? If he wanted to be popular, why did he take the slaves out of Egypt as opposed to endearing himself with the Egyptians?
The vastly larger Egyptians.
Oh, of course. If he wanted to be popular, why didn't he come to the Babylonians and said, hey, man, I'm going to be your God. You're really powerful. You have
I'm
going to
give
influence.
You all this good stuff. Just, you know, worship me.
Right.
All I require is you to kneel at my feet.
Right. Yeah, there you go. That sounds like Hasatan.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Narrow-minded.
You know, Yahweh really wanted to actually be worshipped like other gods do. He has way more power than any of them. If that was what he desired, he could come to earth, crush an entire army before the people's eyes, and say, bow at my feet.
Of course.
If that's what he wanted, he could do that. And it would,
instantly.
You know, it'd be like taking a walk around the block.
If he wanted everyone to accept him, all he would have to do is appear in the sky as brilliant with a bold voice and say, here's who I am. This is what you need to do for me to accept you. And here's what you need to do for me to annihilate you. And, you know, he'd have everybody's undivided attention. But where would the choice be? Where would love
be? There wouldn't be much choice. There wouldn't be any choice. That's the whole point. And that, you know, you start right out with Abraham, who walked out of Babylon of his own volition, on his own accord.
Yeah.
Because he wanted this relationship with Yahweh more than he wanted to stay in Babylon.
Now, if Yahweh wanted to be popular, would he not have told Abraham, stay here in Babylon and let's establish a big popular religion here?
Yeah, that's
As
what he
opposed
would have done.
To coming
that's
to a exactly. place
He wouldn't
that
have walked him out into the wilderness.
Right. And if Yahweh wanted to be popular, would he have established this covenant relationship with a guy no one had ever heard of that was had nothing going for him, or would he have gone to the king?
No, he'd have went to the king.
Of course. Of course.
He would have went to the media, you know.
Yeah, there you go. Narrow-minded and hard-headed adversaries and those who inflict suffering find me enjoying the terms and conditions of your relationship agreement. It really all boils down to, if you want to look at the Torah exists to present the mitzvah, the terms and conditions of the relationship agreement. That's why it exists. And so Dodd is saying, you know, the narrow-minded, the hard-headed, the people whose minds are in opposition to Yahweh's Torah, they find me enjoying the terms and conditions of your covenant. Those who actually inflict suffering, which would be the religious, the political, the military, those who inflict suffering, those who are all about affliction and distress, yeah, they'll find me just enjoying the covenant. And the thing that causes, I think, all of us just to relax and enjoy life is the covenant. So, you know, somebody can be, going off and bombing the Islamic State. They can have the mightiest military in the world. They can be inflicting great pain and suffering. And, you know, I don't give a hoot. I'm going to be enjoying the terms and conditions of the covenant. It's interesting today, old Vladimir Putin laid out a speech where he said that the United States is really the most negative influence on the world today. That the United States is belligerently, it read just like the 18th chapter of Yashaya, that the United States with its gunboat diplomacy and its dishonest rhetoric is a hugely negative influence on the world today. And whether he says it's their invasions of Middle East countries, their military interventions, all of the treaties that they're engaged with, or their belligerence in the Ukraine, the United States is the most negative influence on the world today.
And anybody can think what they want about Putin, and they're probably right about him, but he's being honest there, and he's right.
He is. He is right. Yeah, I would have no desire to have Vladimir be my bosom buddy. But he's right. What he said there is true. Dode loved every word because he knew the righteousness and vindicating nature of your restoring and enduring testimony is eternal and forever, providing me with essential knowledge that the thought process to understand and the good judgment I require because I want to be restored to life and live. This has some of my favorite words in it. I love tzedak, which means to vindicate. And this is tzedak, vindicate, righteous, trust, being acquitted. I love edut, which is restoring witness and enduring testimony. I love la olam. It's the approach that is eternal, unlimited, unconstrained in time. And then one of my very favorite Hebrew words is bien, because bien is not just understanding. Bien tells you the means to understand. The way that you understand is that you observe things so that you come to know them, and then you make connections between things, then that leads to understanding. So bien is this process by which you make connections between that which you have observed so that you understand. Bien means between and to connect so as to understand. And that leads to chaya, which is life, abundant, flourishing, revived and nurtured, growing, enduring life. So this, which is the concluding statement of the tzedak verses, has got it all. The righteous and vindicating nature, tzedak, of your restoring and enduring testimony, edut, is la olam, provides an approach that is eternal and forever, unlimited and unconstrained, providing me with the knowledge required to understand bien, so that because I am restored to life and live, chaya. That's the full equation right there. You want to live forever? Come to understand what Yahweh has conveyed in his eternal and restoring, vindicating testimony. It provides us with everything we need to know to understand. And that gets right to the point that you were making earlier, Larry, that the means to Yahweh is through understanding. You've got to think it through. You've got to invest the time to come to know and then make the connection so that you understand. And once you understand, then you're in a position to engage with him in the covenant relationship. But understanding is what leads to it, not faith.
Well, understanding is key. Even if I set, even as we set, the seventh day aside, apart, as mm-hmm. we set the Moed Mikra apart. We honestly, on the Moed Mikra, cannot do them, you know, with the soil and bringing out the sheaves and waving them. And
right.
Most of us aren't farmers. You know?
Right.
We can't really cook a Pesach lamb either. You know,
no, we can't bring a lamb into the home and butcher it, you know, have it prance around the home for 4 days before Pesach, and then butcher it in front of the whole family, and then have a big fire where we incinerate the remainder of it. And we can't do anything that it says regarding the temple.
No, but we can understand it, though.
All of it. All of
it. Yeah, and that's the thing. And, I mean, we have a hard time just getting the time straight. You know,
correct.
I mean,
that's
a handful
correct.
Of us for us, but
right.
to understand it and to understand Yahweh's nature, and that's
right.
really what he wants, his plan and his nature out there, so people can get to know him and understand him through his words in the most
yes.
unadulterated way we can do that,
right.
and that's important, because if we try to read religious material, we'll never know Yahweh. That's
oh,
just
course.
A fact.
Yeah, and knowing is good. And I'm glad that I know Yahweh. I'm glad that I know the terms and conditions of his covenant. I'm glad that I know that he has invited me to meet with him seven times a year. I'm glad that I know these things. Knowing is a good thing. Understanding is infinitely superior. In knowing that there is empowerment, and understanding, though, there is great liberty. I mean, everything changes for an individual the moment they understand who Yahweh is and what he's offering. Once you understand what the invitations are to meet with God, once you understand the terms and conditions of the covenant, once you understand that the Torah is teaching, once you, you know, understand that everything falls into place. Tremendous comfort, tremendous liberation. It's like when you know, you're always on edge that, you know, somebody might know more than you know. You might engage in a debate or a discussion, and somebody knows more than you know. And so knowing always has its limitations and concerns. There are no limitations and concerns when it comes to understanding. Understanding is the best thing there is. There is.
I have to tell you, unless yeah. somebody's been into Yada Yada and doing a lot of translation work and
yeah.
and really seriously scrutinizing the plan and the words, there are very few people that know much of anything.
I would tell you that in my estimation, that there's less than 1/100 of 1% of people who know. And then I would say it's around 1 in a million who understand. Very few people.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to get past even the keep and the do. You've got to understand that
right.
it isn't law. There's so many things that you really have to get comfortable
church.
With and become
right.
to understand. I mean,
right.
until you
Jesus
do that.
Jesus Christ, church, Christian, Lord, all of that, you've got to get past.
I don't even engage them unless it's just to
yeah.
you know, correct them. But I have
right.
to tell you, even people that I guess they call themselves Hebrew Roots Movement, I don't know what they call themselves, but there seems to be a lot of them that say
yeah.
Yahweh, but at the same time they're keeping and doing, and they have religious
right.
pictures of themselves.
Right.
And,
yeah. Torah
and,
is
and all the southern
and obeying. I don't know why it struck me, but I wanted to share one last thing here tonight, and that is that I had a friend that wrote me about anti-Semite, you know, and I've used anti-Semite all the time, and I've just thought about it, you know, as the ancestors of Shem, and the anti-Semite was, you know, spoke of being a racist as it relates to the descendants of Shem, therefore the Israelites. But Shem, the Hebrew word Shem, means name. So anti-Semite is really anti-name. And weren't the Yehudim named after Yahweh? Doesn't Yehudim mean related to Yah? And so anti-Semite would mean those who are opposed to the name.
I didn't think about that before.
Yeah, but there's a great example of the difference between knowing and understanding. It, this person wrote me the other day and said, you know, you're, let me help you understand what anti-Semite actually means. It means in opposition to the name. But that's a great example of the difference between knowing something and understanding it, and how much how vastly superior understanding is.
Well, that's one of those ones that I'm kicking myself for not seeing. It's clear as day.
Yeah, clear as day. It's essentially a summation of the third statement on the first of those two tablets.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a powerful indication. Guys, we're still recording, but we're no longer broadcasting live. Larry, I did send you an email. I don't know if you got it. And
I just got it. I've been talking to Scott during the show. So I'm going to try to set up a time when we can pre-record them, because during the work day, I just can't. But I absolutely can pre-record it, and he's going to get back.
Terrific. So we're going to you're going to cover Shattering Myths on those days. And then a week from today, JB, if you and Larry can do this program, I would appreciate it. I'll be on the road driving.
Yeah.
No problem. You get in, and then I'll call in. How's that, JB?
That'll work.
Okay.
Good luck.
I'm gonna, and you guys, if you want to continue with the next group of eight verses of the 119 Psalm, great. If you don't, we just finished, by the way, with 119, 144. If you want to do something else, that's also okay. Whatever you would like to do will be just fine.
Okay.
Okay,
I know what I'll work on if he can get the board where we can pre-record two shows. I'll do one on science, and I'm going to do the other on Yahweh's nature, and those are the two shows I'm going to do. So
perfect. And Scott, by the way, is a real pleasure to work with. I know you guys are good buds, and you talk all the time. But
he and I'll do the show together. That way, he can save me here.
Okay, and then you and JB do the Shabbat show a week from today.
Okay, and I'll be happy to go on with this, or we can go we can work off different stuff. Like I said, I'm always creating notes out of yada yada, and making expanding them, and putting this piece together with that piece together, and I can do a show that way as well.
Yeah,
I can
do it anyway. When you're focused on what Yahweh had to say, it doesn't matter where you go. You can learn no matter where you turn. We all grow, we all share, we all come to understand no matter where we turn. The whole story fits together. There's no part of the story that's not interesting.
Well, that's right. I mean, the fight we always have is trying to get people away from the religious nature of things. You know, I've said before, if I tell you I have a friend named Jim, you don't say what religion is that.
Right.
But that's what people have been conditioned to do. That's what I say. It's in every aspect of our society.
Just because they have the title God.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the reason why, I mean, I don't very often refer to Yahweh as God. And I most often use the shortened version of his name, just Yah. I view him as my friend. Yeah, I know he's God. Yeah, I know how powerful he is. You know, I know how brilliant he is. I get all that. But for me to be comfortable in my relationship, he's my friend.
Family. You know, I get the people now that come off with the, you know, oh, God was taken from God. And, you know, but you can't even find a God named God.
No.
If you look him up, they say it's Odom. It's this. They all have a personal name, and they're just – it's a Germanic noun
is what it looks like to me. It's just a – right.
It's a title.
It's a title, and it's a word. And
yeah,
the fact
it was never
is, we can't
God
even speak in English. I would ask you, okay, what day of the week is it? And every one of the days is after named after a god. Okay? Why don't you name the planets for me? You can't talk about the planets without naming false gods.
Pluto.
Why don't you tell me what month it is? False gods again. You know,
yeah,
we can't
until you
tell
get
time.
Past,
we can't,
I think
we can't
October
talk.
Or
yeah, we can't
no,
talk
no, you
space.
Don't say this month. It's October, which would be the 8th
yeah,
month.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
October
would be 10, right? And it's it's not.
Is 8.
Oh, Oct, that's right. Should be Oct is 8.
Yeah,
Oct is 8, and it's the it's the 10th month. And that was only because they could throw in 2 months, one to celebrate the divinity of Julius Caesar, and the other one to celebrate the deity of Augustus Caesar.
Yeah.
Yeah, Oct is 8.
You know, going back to what you were just saying, though, you know, talking about not necessarily, you know, while he has got that power and all that, but you still just view him as a friend. Yeah, you know, my best friend, he is a lot smarter than me.
Yeah.
He's physically stronger than me. But he's still my friend. Yeah, I speak to him as my friend. We're
right.
You know, when we talk, we're equals.
That's right.
Even though physically, you know, mentally, he's smarter, he's stronger than I am.
Right.
Yeah, I don't
know
in power to him and look up at him.
And he's smarter than I am by an enormous amount, but he doesn't want to have us approach him as someone who is,
you know.
He doesn't
want that defining the relationship.
Correct. Correct. Yeah, what he wants defining the relationship is father-son.
Exactly.
Yeah, it works for me. Works for me.
Well, that's because it is that way. He is the father. He is the creator.
Right.
You know,
we are his children.
Yeah.
And you're going to have a more legitimate relationship with him than you did with your own dad. You better.
Correct.
Well, what's great is in an ideal relationship, as you grow older, the relationship becomes more equal. The father-son relationship becomes more equal the older you both
get. That's a good point. That's very good.
Yeah, and that's the whole purpose of Shavuah and this whole idea of being enriched and empowered is that Yahweh doesn't want us to be babies in his family. He wants us to grow, and the more we grow, the more we become equivalent to him, the more we become a more equal,
and the more productive the relationship becomes for both of us.
That is correct. That is the beauty of the whole thing. That's the whole concept of a loving father trying to enrich his children so the children grow. Yeah,
exactly.
It's a beautiful plan. He is. He's as I said, he's a righteous dude, man. He is a good guy.
Well, as Dode said, he's the only straight guy in the room, you know.
Right, yeah, it's the only straight game in town. Yeah, the only straight. Yeah, Dode got
the only honest guy in the room. That's it. That's it. And, you know, everybody's got some skeletons. Everybody's got something they're hiding. Man, it's all out there on the table. There's nothing to hide. And that's why he's not Stalin or a lord. He's not looking to get people on their knees shaking like a leaf.
Right.
He's,
doesn't
he's saying, here's my
doesn't
hands.
Doesn't want to control, doesn't want to bribe him.
If that
doesn't...
was his goal, he has a lot better way, a lot easier way at his disposal of achieving it. If that was his goal, he would not be doing it the way he's doing it.
Right. And he wouldn't be lovable.
You're 100% on that, JB, and I'm with you. I mean, there's just a million other ways he could do it. You know, I would have asked Mr. Scary Man there that ran to his cleric. I would have asked him, oh, gee, why did he use a dove and a lamb as the primary symbols to represent him? What's going on with
that? Two animals that when you look at, you think of power, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
why did he refer to himself as light, not a sword?
Yeah.
You know, if he wanted to be fear, he says, I am a sword. No, I'm light.
Yeah.
If you want to be fiery, why did he say I'm darkness?
And I know why you don't engage people like that anymore, and I really understand it, because there is no thought process. There is no scrutinizing of his words. It's just jumping from religious tradition to religious tradition. I had one woman that I was feeding words to for about 8 months, you know, sharing words like, you know, at least 15 verses not to lose my name, and don't call me Lord, and you're going to forget my name on account of Baal, and all this, and sure. And she, I went to her page, and it was saying, Lord, I said, why are you still doing this? And she said, well, and I saw she was mingling again with the Christians. I think I'll just call him Lord of the Earth.
Okay, great.
And I said, well, then you are an absolute idiot. It was a waste of my time. I'm sorry I ever met you. And blocked her.
Yeah, no, I'm really glad that you engage and that you are that blunt. And I did it for a very long time. And I've just finally reached the point where I don't have the energy for it anymore. I don't care anymore because I have found that there is no one benefits. If somebody is religious, you're not going to change them. And if they're open to Yahweh's Torah, prophets, and Psalms, then they're not preaching religion. And so there's just no reason to.
The reason I engage is because they ask.
I know.
And then
they ask, and then it starts out,
I'm so happy to finally find the truth.
Yeah, I know.
You know? And then I get people to say
Many have found the truth.
Yeah. That's why I don't just stop. I mean, I tell them to seriously think about what you're saying. Right. You know, as the example today, hey, sure, you know, I think I said this on Shattering Myths today, you know, you're talking about the fearful deity that you love, this fearful deity that's going to either love me or go to hell.
Yeah.
I mean, when you really put it in that context, and that's what it is, and I say, well, you know, I'd love you to come out to have dinner with Yalda and I tonight, and if you don't, I'm going to burn your goddamn house down and murder your wife and your kids.
Yeah.
So what time
and
is dinner?
And torture them in the process, yes.
Yeah,
so
what
time
are
you
is dinner
come
now?
Yeah, what time are you coming by? No, it's a beautiful way to say it. But that's the basis of Christianity, heaven or hell. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Yep. Yeah, I've got to run,
but
guys.
As you point out, it's fear that makes governments and religions tick. That's the whole operating premise.
Oh, yeah. Satan knows.
I mean,
that's why it says on the Quran, he who fears will obey. Yeah.
Yeah, but why not go out there, man? I'd love to have everything at my disposal. Think again about those relationships. Somebody you honestly really like being around, and you've got all eternity to meet them, 20 galaxies away in some great water park, you know, and do a campfire and eat dinner and be laughing about what you did last week. I mean, wouldn't that be a wow? And you owe nothing, cost you nothing. There's no fear. There's no worry. There's nothing to.
And every meeting is a party. It's a celebration of life.
Yeah, why not operate out of the positives as opposed to the negatives? And, you know, even lamentation, even being sad is a great part of life. It really is.
Yeah, of course it is. Of course, I agree. If there wasn't there wouldn't be happiness.
Down. Yeah, there's a lot of wisdom in lamentation, you know. And so, you know, I mean, you got to look at things from so many different angles. And when you really finally get to the point where you understand that it's relationship that's the wine of life, and all that's really being offered to you is everything through relationship.
Yep.
I mean, I want to work at that relationship.
Yeah.
I think most people, given the proper material, if they have a brain, would want to work at that relationship.
As Doe says, I love your plan. I love your word. I love your promise. I love your plan. It's the best of everything. That's why it's so sad that so many people have chosen the lie when the truth is so much better.
Well, it's sad. I see so many people that they get the name and this and that, and then they turn it into a religion.
Yeah,
you know, they've got the name, and you maybe see on FB. I'm always talking about pictures because people represent themselves through pictures, and you're looking at these pictures, and they're all praying and this and that, and on their knees.
Slavery is the natural
seems like a lot of the men have
headgear
on.
Yeah, it is. People on their knees, enslaved to a religion.
Slavery is the natural inclination of man. That is why religion is so popular. They don't want to think for themselves. They don't want to have to worry about taking care of things themselves. They want that. Yeah, that's why the whole, it's in God's hand, predestination thing is so popular. People want to be able to say, I don't have to worry about, I'm suffering this because this is what God wants. This is happening because it's what God wants. I don't want responsibility. People don't like
want you to
and I can't blame them. I'm not big on responsibility myself.
But, the most liberating, the most empowering thing of all is to think. I mean, thinking and understanding and being free is just so liberating. It's so much better.
Oh, yeah. We have no responsibility and we're off exploring the universe. I'm looking forward to that. But in the meantime, I have to take responsibility.
Right.
And people are afraid of that.
Yeah. I love it.
Well, I mean, you talk about exploring, but part of that exploration is you're going to be exploring a lot of different relationships in the process.
Right. Yeah.
At least thousands of others, you know.
Yeah.
And that's
the entire universe is based on relationships. The physical universe, right. Light, energy, the whole thing is based on relationships.
Yeah,
that's
right.
The science, chemistry is all about the relationship of chemicals, how they relate together, how they react when you bring this and this.
It's all relationships.
It's all about relationships.
Yep, indeed. Guys, I've got to run, but I've enjoyed this. I look forward to hearing what you guys have to say next week. And thank you, Larry, for covering for me on next week as well on Shattering Myths. You'll have a great time with Scott. He's just a real pleasure to work with.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, good night, y'all.
Good night.
I'll talk to you guys later.
Okay.
Have a good weekend.
Happy Shabbat. Shalom. Bye-bye.